considering gender and sexuality in medieval Europe, it's often a bit of a task requiring nuance and flexibility, as medieval people thought of and saw themselves differently to how we think of them today. Now, using modern day terms such as LGBTQIA+, you know, and obviously it's got counterparts with LGBT+ or LGBTQ+, sexuality, and even gender identity is kind of categorising and placing historical figures under a label so that we can more readily identify them, so we can kind of see a connection between our modern identities, our modern lives, and think about historical figures that are representative of that. But sometimes these labels don't quite fit their behaviour or how they would have identified. And by and large, studies of sexuality which fall outside what I'll term a heteronormative binary, so thinking of heterosexuality as the default. So other studies of sexuality often identify these areas as queer or queer history. And that looks at that of the other, but using the term queer as a kind of catch-all, I think, can also be problematic. And there are several ongoing debates and discussions around terminology and sexuality, which I will link to at the bottom of this podcast. But for this discussion, I want to focus on royal sexualities in particular and think about one of England's most famous kings, Richard I, and the allegations of homosexuality that have been attached to his reputation. So I think it's necessary, first of all, to consider some of the terminological issues when considering male same-sex affections and relationships in this period. And this is something which could take up a whole other discussion in of itself, and you could have people chatting for hours about how we think of historical sexualities. But what I want to think about is that the terms heterosexuality, bisexuality, homosexuality and queer, they're all modern concepts, and therefore it's not quite accurate to use them for the medieval period, when those who expressed affection outside of a male-female binary would not have identified with them. Now, this is a contested area of discussion, and most notably the scholar John Boswell argued for gay history, though not an ideal term, to be utilised for the history of those who now identify as part of the modern gay community. And this case study of Richard I kind of, and tying in with Boswell's work, also helps us think about the pervasiveness of heteronormativity, which is the idea that everyone in the past is heterosexual and any behaviours outside of that was not the default. So within the scholarship of the history of sexuality, we've also seen this heteronormativity idea kind of persist until the last few decades, and therefore this impacts modern understanding of kind of sexual affection, sexual desires and relationships of the past. The unstated acceptance of heterosexuality as the default for historical figures places the onus on historians to definitively prove what can be labelled as non-heteronormative behaviour and attractions, rather than approaching subjects as though they are fluid in gender and attraction. And though there's more recent discussion, as I'll go into below, demonstrate a move kind of beyond sexual and gender binaries, there needs to be a shift towards a relaxation of categorisation and binary identification. And there's an excellent study by Kim Phillips and Barry Ray, who have highlighted that pre-modern Western culture encouraged homosociality, which is a strong bond between men, and the homoerotic. Now, concerning the mythology regarding the sexuality of Richard I, challenging the notion of his homosexuality actually implies a kind of binary heterosexuality, which is an inaccurate descriptor as well. It's, you know, contesting, is he heterosexual, is he homosexual? And we, again, need to kind of rid ourselves of these binaries. It's not necessarily one or the other. And I think historians are, and we continually need to be aware of, the difficulties of imposing modern terminologies and concepts on previous societies. And a discussion of Richard's sexuality in particular tells us more about a historian's viewpoint than Richard himself sometimes, or indeed the views of his contemporaries.